is shuffling the control center tonight with all kinds of things that could go wrong and do. Smooth transition, that one. Good evening and welcome to Off Planet Radio Live. I'm Randy Mahuggins, and it is the 13th of March, 2013. We are in some very interesting alignments right now, talking to a lot of people. First off, my voice, well, just by way of explanation, I lost my voice. last Thursday night, I was on the phone with a friend of mine out on the West Coast, and she was really hurting. 24 hours later, my voice started to give out, and I couldn't talk for about 2 days at full volume. So it's slowly coming back. There's a lot of people out there that are going through some kind of syndrome. We don't quite know what it is. Is it HARP? Is it the energetics of Mercury retrograde? That might be an interesting way to look at it as well, because we are in Mercury retrograde right now, this really weird time when the relative orbits of Mercury to Earth appear to stall. And it creates some wild energetics. It creates wild energetics when you consider what we went through December 21st and what we're about to go through 1 week from tonight when we go into the spring equinox and a planetary alignment. So we've got interesting things that are going on the Earth, in the cosmos, and in our own cellular structure as well. Some people are calling this ascension sickness, DNA activation. You have to kind of decide that for yourself, but there is some very, very strange things going on. The skies are electric. Here on the East Coast, we've been kind of in a mode where the skies have been very clear at night, and there's a lot of activity up there. So there's also a lot of activity that's going on the ground. I'm noticing a spike again in people reporting sightings of craft, and a lot of anomalous activity again ramping up. So it's a real interesting time. We're going to watch what happens. We'll be live next Wednesday night during the alignment. My guest is going to be Micah Hanks. And Micah is a self-proclaimed skeptic, anomalist, an investigator of paranormal and mysterious phenomena. His book is UFO Singularity. And he will be here with me live next week for 2 hours. And we put up a new interview this weekend, too. If I sound scattered, it's because I'm kind of glancing at the monitor here. We put up a new interview over the weekend. It's on the YouTube channel and on the offplanetradio.com site with Fred Burks, former State Department translator for both presidents, Clinton and G.W. Bush, and their vice presidents, secretaries of states, and high-level administrative figures. And that's about a 37-minute interview. We want to take a look at that. It's a real interesting interview. There's a lot of other things happening right now. In a sense, we're kind of starting over. We left the old network, and we're kind of starting over on our own. So the next few weeks will tell the tale. I'm going to take a break here for a few minutes. I'm going to bring my other guest, Mac Maloney, on. Chris Holly's on the line with me. And so what we're going to do is just take a real quick break here while I pull together phone connections again to get Mac on. We're going to throw some Mac Maloney music up here for you to listen to while we go to break. We'll be right back on Off Planet Radio Live. I'm Randy Moggins. We'll be right back. stress as never before. Environmental hazards, genetically modified foods, toxins in the earth and air, chemtrails, and escalating radiation levels. How do we get control? Thanks to the work of a team of researchers, we are pleased to announce a revolutionary natural technology that can help your body rebuild its original coating. RNA Drops is a complement formula based on the newly discovered iCell. RNA is the building block of DNA. These new DNA structures are the gateway to what is called ascension. Many users of the RNA Drops have discovered the benefits of a product as unique as their own biology, finding newfound well-being, peace of mind, and a sense of control over their destiny. Like me, they are enjoying a sense of empowerment within their own bodies and emotions. To get all the details on RNA Drops and to find out how you can obtain a free mini bottle, go to RNAGenesis.com. That's RNAGenesis.com. Our guests for this hour with a lot to say. This is Off Planet Radio. I'm Randy Moggins, and on the line with me, my two guests for this hour, I have with me Chris Holly, Chris Holly's Paranormal World, and Mac Maloney, UFOs in Wartime. Good evening, guys, and welcome to Off Planet Radio.
Hi, Randy.
Hi. How are you?
We're here.
You
glad
are.
To be here.
Great to have you guys on together. This show kind of came about tonight. The last time I had Chris on, she mentioned that you, Mac, and her occasionally got a chance to talk together and hadn't realized you were connected in some way. So I thought, wouldn't it be fun to have you both on and let you share a little bit about your individual perspective on things? We got Chris's perspective at the beginning of the year when we talked about things that had happened in 2012 and the things we expected to see in 2013. And Mac, I'd like to kind of get some of your perspective on where we are in the world of paranormal as well. Your website is macmaloney.com, is that correct?
Yes, it is, yeah.
And so, Mac, what are you working on right now? You got some new books coming?
Yes, we have a book coming out in, I think it's coming out in June or July from Penguin Books. It's called Beyond Area 51. And it's a follow-up to UFOs in Wartime, which came out about a year and a few months ago. And what it's about is it just seemed that there were a number of books out there having to do with Area 51 and TV shows as well. And I had just spoken to someone who was in the Air Force a few years ago and who actually had been out at Area 51 on a couple of occasions. And I said to him, almost kidding, I said, you know, are there such places as Area 52, Area 53, and so on? And to my surprise, he said, yes, there are. And what I was talking about was, are there other secret bases out in the Nevada desert that do the same kind of things or similar things that they do at Area 51? It's just that we don't hear about them.
Mm-hmm.
And it turns out that there are. So we kind of just took that dream of an idea, and the book talks about, I think there's a dozen places around the world that are similar to Area 51, and the interesting, and some of them are real, and some of them, frankly, are not real, but the one thing they all have in common is they have this UFO connection to them. And I think it's safe to say that just about every known secret military base around the world, no matter who, what country it belongs to, what military built it, has some kind of a UFO connection to it, and I kind of found that fascinating.
So you didn't just go with the Area 51 connection. Are you looking at places like in Australia and Great Britain as well, Mac?
Yes. We did Pine Gap, which is in Australia. There's a chapter on the St. Louis Valley in Colorado, which is got to be the wildest place in the United States. Not only do they see UFOs down there on a regular basis, but all kinds of paranormal activity. Christopher O'Brien is a researcher, and he's written a number of books about the St. Louis Valley in southwest Colorado, and it's just a fascinating place. I got to interview him. He helped me a lot with that particular chapter. We talk about HOP up in Alaska. We talk about this very strange place in China called Hunyantang, where no one is really sure exactly what's going on there, but it seems to have some kind of a definite UFO connection. When we went to did the chapter on the UK, the interesting thing was that it was very hard to actually find Britain's Area 51. I talked to and interviewed Nick Redfern, who is very famous, and Nick Cook, also someone who, and Nick Cook worked for the UK military. And like between the three of us, we were trying to figure out exactly where England's Area 51 might be, and we came up with 10 suspects, and we all kind of agreed on one of them, and that's going to be revealed in the book. One more thing I'd just like to throw in. One of the most fascinating things that I found out was, and I'm not sure how many people would know this, but I've asked people, what country has the most UFO sightings around the world? And a lot of people, you know, they tend to say the United States. But per capita and per number, it's actually Scotland. There are more UFOs sighted over Scotland than any other country around the world. And what's interesting is that there's this one particular place in Scotland called the Falkirk Triangle.
Yes.
Where
yes.
More UFOs are, you know, seen in that triangle than any place in Scotland. And sitting almost in the middle of the Falkirk Triangle is Roslyn Chapel, which was made famous by the Knights Templar. It just seems like it's too much of a coincidence to be a coincidence, you know. But anyway, that's what's going to be in the book. The book is Beyond Area 51. It should be out in July.
I think that sounds killer. It's good that you're going to do sort of a survey of other global sites, and I'm sure that there'll be stuff in that book that will inform our perspective here, because we tend to be kind of, well, U.S.-centric in terms of sightings and craft and things like that. I know some of the history behind the U.K., and I have to say I was surprised that Scotland had the highest incidence, but when you think about it, I've talked to people in Scotland. There was one particular person who was a contactee who gave me a lot of details on his particular contacts in Scotland. So I guess I'm not surprised by that, but per capita, that's pretty amazing. I would have guessed China.
China, right. You know, who knows? Why Scotland? And when we got into exactly what is going on with Roslyn Chapel, which is supposedly where the Knights Templar all fled after the famous Friday the 13th massacre of the Knights Templar.
Mm-hmm.
And the connection and just all the odd things that are in that chapel. For instance, there's a stone relief carved into the wall of the chapel that shows a corn stalk, an ear of corn. The thing is that corn came from the New World, and the New World hadn't been discovered for another 200 years to go before, you know, when Roslyn Chapel was built. So how did the people who were carving that cornstalk even know what a cornstalk was? There's also a DNA that, when you look at it, it looks like the helix of a DNA on one of the pillars inside the chapel. There's all kinds of very strange things going on inside that chapel, and it just happens to be right in the middle of this place where lots of people see UFOs. So it was baffling, to me doing the research, and I think it'll be baffling to people who read the book.
This phenomena seems to constantly unfold in new and unexpected ways, and I think you'd both agree that the more we investigate, the more surprised we are at the anomalies we see and the new data that continues to spring up. We've been in this UFO era, what I call the modern era, post-World War II, and of course, Mac, you've documented beyond that back into the World War I, pre-World War I period. But it seems like the more we dig into this and the more we learn, the more mystified we become. Is that kind of the way you see it as well? Chris, what do you get the sense of in terms of unraveling this whole juggernaut?
Well, I think there's more people that are opening their minds and really looking at all the puzzle pieces here and putting them together that are logical. Instead of being mystified, they're figuring out, you know, this is probably just a lot of history and science that we don't understand. But if we look at it, they're telling us, just as Mac just described in that Scotland Chapel, the Rosalind,
yeah,
having the course, that these clues have been there for us the entire time. I mean, I'm a big fan of all the, you know, alien shows where they show the history and this is that and look at this and this is a picture, you know, they're obviously carving aliens and in interaction with other beings, and we chose not to see that. We chose to make it something else. In fact, I think we go out of our way not to see right what's in front of our faces at times. And I have to say, first of all, Mac's book, UFOs and More, is the book I use when people just won't believe me or giving me a terrible time. My answer is, read this book and then tell me you still don't believe. I mean, to me, it's one of the best things out there. And I've been pushing it ever since I first became, you know, known with about Mac's book and started to read it and had contact with him. But I love his book. There's no other questions you can have. It's these most respectful, credible witnesses in the world telling you, yes, there's UFOs. We've all seen them. We've dealt with them. You know, how much more do you need to hear before you at least open your mind to considering this? But with that said, Mac, your new book, I can't wait till it comes out. And it's so funny to me. If you look on my site, just the other day, I put up this show's information, and under it, a little box of what I'm going to write next.
Mm-hmm.
And what it's about is UFOs, heart machines, Plum Island, and Camp
Nazis.
Hero on Long Island.
Nazis.
And the
Nazis,
right. And the reason is, I was convinced for years that Camp Hero and Plum Island were full of the Nazi German scientists that did have either an alien connection or at least back engineered something they had captured or crashed, and were back out on the end of Long Island playing with this thing or these beings. And that's why at that point in the 60s, with just you, everybody you talked to on Long Island had seen a UFO or knew somebody or had an experience or even encounters with these things. It was constant and ongoing, and the people sort of just let it happen because everyone laughed at them. Nobody was helping them, so they just accepted it. Including me, I had a go-around or two in my lifetime at that point, and so did many people I know. And the one thing that we always talked about, there always seemed to be some type of human interaction going on with other beings when these things took place. So I not only believe that there's Area 51s all over the world, I think we had one right here on Long Island at that point in time that both since have closed, thank God, and have been moved and are gone. However, I do now think, because I've been told and all kinds of weird things are happening, that there is a harp machine on the end of Long Island, exactly just a few miles from where both of those facilities stood. And that's, to me, as you said, there's coincidences and there's, come on, this can't be coincidental. So, you know, I think that's all connected. And us poor little locals were the little guinea pigs that were used. Who would believe us? Who's going to help us? Who's going to do anything about it? And it was convenient. It's also sticking out in the middle of the Atlantic Ocean. And at that point time, it was sparsely populated. So they could come and go and whatever. And who knows? It could be a very close space travel lane for them to come in that area off in the Atlantic Ocean. But I think that those connections are probably made all over the world.
We tend to think of these UFO phenomena as being in isolated places. Mainly because of places like Area 51, which, like Groom Lake, they're out in the middle of the desert. They're relatively isolated. The military has sort of isolated those areas from public view for the most part. What a lot of people don't think about is the fact that many of these bases, and I'm talking mainstream bases that are close to major population areas, are in themselves centers for this type of activity. There's a lot of underground tunnels. There's a lot of strange traffic. I mean, I live here in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, and it's well known, and it has been documented by insiders, whistleblowers, of all the underground tunnels that are here, of bases that are strewn around this area, and of the activity that's gone on for 50, 60 years here, mostly undocumented by mainstream press. But a couple of people are now putting books together about the local activity here. And so we've actually had this hidden under our noses for a long time, the activity itself. What I wanted to ask you to is, you have very different aspects to what you report on. Mac, you tend to report more on the UFO phenomena itself. Chris, you tend to focus more on the phenomenon that goes into the actual entities and the abductions and the effects on human subjects. And from each of your individual perspectives, I'm curious to know, is there overlap? Mac, do you have a sense of what Chris talks about when she writes about some of her contactees?
Well, to tell you the truth, I'm kind of new to the field, because even though I've been writing books for 20 years full time, this is my first nonfiction book in more than 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
I wrote military fiction before this, over 40 books published, and also some science fiction. So I only mention the number because it shows you how I was really immersed in novel writing until we came up with the idea of this of UFOs and Wartime, which is a nonfiction book. And I have to tell you that even though I was always had an interest in UFOs, I didn't realize to the degree, first of all, how much information is out there, how many people are out there dispersing this information, and frankly, how much bad information is out there. And so, in saying that, I have to say that I was a little bit skeptical about the stories of abductees and so on and so forth until I heard Chris's story. And I have to tell you that she convinced me that there is something to this. And in a sense, I've talked to different people and people who knew Bud Hopkins and talked about how he would bring people into sessions and they would tell him things that he did not reveal. And what he was finding out is that people who never knew each other were reporting the same things about their abduction experience. But when Chris and I first started talking, and then she was on another radio show of ours, and she gave us our story, she convinced me. I mean, I'm not that as deep into it as she is, but she convinced me that there's definitely something to this abduction phenomena, and it's obviously tied to the UFO phenomena. And all I can think of is I just hope that we get the answers to what these things are in our lifetimes.
Yeah, because when I looked at your writing history and saw, obviously writing war fiction books and then going into UFOs in wartime, which does do a significant amount of documenting of historical UFO data, I could see the transition that you were making. And this is a field where some people come at it with their disbelief already suspended because they've experienced or because they know. Other people have sudden shock syndrome where they've just suddenly had the veil ripped off and they see it. But it takes an immense amount of courage and integrity to work in this field and to maintain your own sanity sometimes, because you're writing about things that the general public still considers to be fringe, to be occult, to not even, well, I think because it was so heavily fictionalized from the 50s, we've kind of been conditioned to think that this is not true, that this is not real phenomena. So people like you, Mac, who come at it from the standpoint of writing from a very factual basis, as you did in UFOs in Wartime, and then the way Chris has come at it, which is documenting her experiences plus the experiences of other contactees, there's almost like a very sharp divergence that goes on in terms of what we're talking about. I think for both of you, you come at it from different perspectives, but you have the same sense of integrity in terms of what you report and how you report it. And that's what I like about Chris's work. That's what I really enjoyed about UFOs in Wartime. Like you said, Chris, it's a book you can give to somebody. I could have given this book to my father, and he would have gotten it. He would have looked at it. I'm sure it would have triggered some things in him from his own wartime experiences. I think the book is useful to take to people who are skeptical, and being skeptical is not necessarily a bad thing. Where we go from there is basically, how do we bring the public up to speed on this? Are we getting there? Are we actually winning people over to where they're willing to look at this with open eyes?
Jeez, you want to try to answer that? I'll answer that on my view.
Yeah, there was a question there. I know I kind of filibustered.
Yeah, yeah. the answer is very slowly at best, very slowly. And I think as the world and the turmoil in the world increases, there's less attention to this or want to know to these areas because they're frightening. And right now, when you feel like maybe you've just been punched in the guts because you've lost your job or you're really struggling and things ahead don't look like they're going to get better fast, the last thing you need is somebody like me saying, oh, and by the way, if you see a big UFO, don't go near it. It might take you and hurt you. They don't want any part of it. You know, they don't want to hear it. So it doesn't stop me. I still try to, as you hey, Randy, just explain what people have told to me, what people have dealt with, how what their warnings are to you, how not to have this happen to you, and if it does, how to deal with it. And I continue to do that because this stuff is not going to stop. And if somebody read one thing I wrote sometime about any part of this, and it helps them because they now find themselves face to face with an unknown and frightened out of their minds. And it's something that maybe perhaps saves their life, like turn and run or don't go towards it or don't do something and find lights or whatever I may have written. I think it's worth it because these incidents are going to increase. And I think the public awareness actually may decrease. When I first came into this years ago, there was so much stuff on the internet, just enormous amounts of sites and things going on. And as the years progressed, it got, smaller and smaller and smaller, to I think it's now down to a place that it's really not that many places to go. And there's definitely nowhere reliable or run by a institution or group that you could really trust to even report something that you've seen or something that's happened to you.
Yeah, we talked about this last time. It is a problem.
That's really bad. Here we are, you're in the United States, you think that we would at least have a university someplace that was maybe a little interested and really document and take all these reports and look at them seriously, but there's nothing. All the universities do is they come and they read my site, because I have that so I can see all that, but they never contact you or talk to you or anything. I took and told the world. I've gotten together, and it was a lot of time, a lot of years, a lot of work. A bunch of people, well, actually came down to six that would actually go along with it. It started out a lot more, but they dropped out for other reasons. They didn't want to be part of it. But people that had experiences and would now talk about it, that all had physical changes that no one could explain. So what I'm telling the world is, if you took these people and examined them and then gave them an IQ test, you would see immediately that they're extremely extremely different than other people walking around. And there has not been one research organization, government organization, not one university, science group, not one group that had any interest in it, because they just think I'm a crazy old woman and don't know what I'm talking about and don't believe it, or don't want that to come out and be public. So it was fascinating to the group that they were releasing this type of information. And if a reliable source came forward, they were even going to allow themselves to, for the first time, be examined and show the things on their bodies that are incredible by any standard. You know, you just don't, that doesn't happen to you if you're a regular human being. And yet no one was interested. I asked if there were questions people wanted to ask this group of people when I had them all organized. Nothing. No one was even interested enough to ask them a question. And I find this incredible. Then they gave out warnings, which I'm going to rewrite again and try to get out. And I'm also putting it in a book that I'm trying to finish and somehow get published. The warnings to mankind that these people have are very, very good and should be listened to. But I don't think there's a public out there that cares. So that to me is as mind-boggling as the actual events that happened to these people. Our disinterest in it. To me, that's fascinating.
Well, I think what's happened, and you kind of said it, we've been anchored in our physical reality to such a heavy degree. We're worried about survival. We're worried about jobs, the economy, the politics.
Right.
All of these things kind of take our eyes off of our surroundings. And more in the 20th century, we live in this electrical atmosphere where we sit in front of boob tubes and we read magazines. We consume all the information that's basically shoveled out the door to us. Our own opinions, our own observations, and our own perceptions have basically gone by the wayside. And this is what I think is real interesting about what you and what Mac are doing, because you're coming at it from a perspective of bringing fresh air into the information flow. And this is important because, to me, this is journalism, whereas what passes for mainstream journalism today, network TV, newspapers, magazines, is basically the mainstream crap that's being shoveled out the door to keep people distracted and scared and in a state of constant bewilderment. I think it takes eyes wide open and somewhat a state of wonder to begin to look at these things. Mac, I'm curious about anything that you learned as you went through studying out the material that you were delving into for doing this book, Beyond Area 51. Was there anything that stood out to you in terms of something that you didn't expect to find?
Yes, and you know, it's funny because it kind of leads into what Chris was saying. What I have found out, just generally speaking, is that that's exactly the situation in the United States. We get so much going on these days that, you know, to try to get people to take on a belief system having to do with UFOs, it's almost a little bit too much to ask them to bear these days. But what's interesting is that's not the case overseas. In France, in England, in Russia, in China, you know, people are more open to talking about UFOs, to reporting them, to try to take a scientific approach to them. And I'll tell you one story which, you know, frankly blew my mind. We have a chapter in the book about these bases in Russia. And one of them is a place called Kapustin Yar, which is it was like a combination Cape Canaveral and Area 51. They do a lot of secret rocket launches there, and if you want to believe what some of the most prominent pilots in Russia are saying, there are UFOs over this place all the time since it's opened in the late 40s. Now, but the other place in Russia that we concentrated on was this place called the Perm Zone, also known as the M Triangle. It's in the Ural Mountains, near the Ural Mountains in Russia, kind of an isolated area. And for years, people knew that very strange stuff was happening there, so much so that the old Soviet Union wouldn't allow anyone into this place, scientists, nobody. The only people who went in there were the military and the KGB, and no one really knows what they were doing in there. But when the Soviet Union fell in the late 1980s, and things opened up a little bit over there, then the government that took its place allowed scientists, researchers, explorers into this place called the M-Triangle. And some of the stuff that they found was just unbelievable, and we interview one of the top Russian researchers about this. Like, for instance, it's a heavily wooded area. Some parts of it are heavily wooded. People would go out in the woods, and they would camp in amongst the trees, yet they would hear the sound of traffic going by them, cars and trucks and buses and trains, even though they weren't anywhere near any of these places. There's no place that you can make a cell phone call in the M-Triangle except this one place, which is non-distinct from everywhere else. They call it the call box. If you stand within this 5 foot by 5 foot box, you can not only make a cell phone call, you can call anywhere in the world. The animals there come right up to you. They have no fear of humans. The fish have no fear of humans. UFOs are seen there all the time. People have encountered beings there all the time. And the story that really blew my mind was when this place was finally opened up to, let's say, the Russian public, there was this gentleman whose name I'm not going to try to pronounce, very Russian name. He was a journalist. He had been mustered out of the army because of health reasons. He was unemployed for a while, caught on to a job as a journalist, found out that they were opening up the M-Triangle for exploration, so he went down there, and he went into the M-Triangle. Now, this is someone who is a journalist, but let's say he was not a genius, let's say, by his own admission. Mm-hmm. Well, he was in the M-Triangle for 3 weeks, and when he came out, something happened to him. He went back to Moscow, where he lived, and all of a sudden, he had this tremendous knowledge of astrophysics. He knew things that he did not know before. He knew things that trained astrophysicists only knew. And he got so deep into that and became so smart in the area of astrophysics, he applied for and became a cosmonaut. This guy had no training at any college. All he did was spend 3 weeks inside the M-Triangle. This knowledge came to him, and he became a cosmonaut. That is just, that story just blows my mind. And this isn't like just reporting on the internet, and you don't know where the sources are. People magazine did a piece on this guy back in the 80s. The M Triangle, people call it a little piece of heaven on earth, and I'm telling you, I'm tending to believe that there might be something to it, because there are many stories, you know, in addition to this guy who became an astronaut, many stories of people who have gone in there with medical problems and they come out cured. People who go in there, you know, maybe things aren't going too well in their personal lives, they come out and they're different people. It's just a tremendous, interesting, fascinating place, and it just happens to be in the middle of nowhere in Russia.
Were you able to dock? It almost sounds like maybe a lighter side of your real-time abductees, Chris.
Well, they all have things where they were, you know, average people, and when they came out the other side after a lifetime or midway through it, about, I would say, they had big jumps in their ability to learn or just know, as Mac just said, know things, which gave them the ability, actually, to successfully protect themselves and support their families and hide better, so that it helped prevent, they knew what to do after a while, being taken again. And they also just would, out of the air, just like Mac just said, become interested or develop a skill that they had no interest in before. And, you know, that's why I was saying, wow, it's like almost frightening. You have to wonder how many other places like this. Mac, do you know anything else in the world that may be similar to that?
No, nothing like that. nothing.
I mean, that's extreme. Yeah,
it is extreme. It is extreme, and you know what? The interesting thing about it too is that where you have this place that is this like little piece of heaven in Russia, as they're calling it, and then not that far away is this this other place, Kapustinya, that as I said was a combination Cape Canaveral and Area 51, and there were people who documented actual dogfights between UFOs and Russian military fighters through the years there, and this one woman, her name is Elena Popovich. She's a very famous Russian pilot. She owns like about 40 airspeed records, and she's almost like a female Chuck Yeager in Russia, very highly esteemed. She wrote a book talking about how her squadron, you know, were doing dogfights with UFOs almost daily during the 50s over Kapustinya. So you have this, Russia is such a strange place anyway. You have this place that's a little piece of heaven in the middle of Russia, and then you go to this other place where, you know, UFOs and jet fighters are fighting each other, which is like extreme to the other angle. I think you're right. I think there could be other places around the world, we just don't know about them yet, which might have this quote-unquote magic that the M-Triangle has. But once again, how do you convince people, how do you convince the scientific community and the media as well to take these places seriously? I wish I knew the answer to that question, but I don't. But I'll tell you, that's the biggest roadblock that we face in everything having to do with UFOs is that, you know, the media doesn't really take the situation seriously, and scientists are prevented from taking it seriously because they know that, you know, their funding will dry up and their reputations will be ruined.
Last year I interviewed Courtney Brown, who's a very well-known remote viewer, and whatever you think about remote viewing, it's a very well-documented phenomenon. And Courtney has been campaigning for years to get acceptance into mainstream academia with remote viewing. And in that show, I sort of countered him a little bit because I have an opposite opinion of that. I think we need to become the ones who are the authorities on these subjects because I don't think the training and the, well, I'll call it mind control that goes into scholarly pursuits in academia makes most mainstream scientists or even most mainstream journalists fit to report on this or to be authoritative about it. They have a mindset that rules out the kind of open inquiry that's required to understand this phenomena.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and you know,
I agree with you there.
You're absolutely correct, and that's really upsetting because I have a friend who's a physicist, and I'm not going to use his name. He's an award-winning physicist, as a matter of fact, for the United States, and when he went to school to get his doctorate in physics, he went to a very, very good American university and went with a Chinese man who got his PhD along with my friend, who then immediately returned to China to head up a government-run department for the research of UFOs and alien life. So they have in China American-trained scientists running a government department, at least one, on these subjects. It's this country and this, you know, our viewpoint that is in the dark ages.
It's the lockdown
there
here.
There are
yeah.
other
yeah.
countries.
It's the lockdown,
right, that,
right.
Yeah.
Right.
I need to qualify what I just said because seated within all of these disciplines, whether it's medicine, science, philosophy, are people who are genuinely seeking and inquiring. And every once in a while, you'll see them, they'll pop their heads up. They'll risk it because they either risk tenure or they risk their reputations and their fortunes in order to do so. So, but I do know just from the contacts I've made over the years that within all of these disciplines in different places, and I think they're kind of strategically seated, are some honest people who will eventually be assets to the unfolding of all of this information that we're trying to bring out through, you know, our books and our radio shows and blogs and all the other things that we're doing right now.
You know, I have to. I agree with what you're saying in a big way. And at the end of UFOs of War Time, I asked four different UFO researchers when they thought the UFO puzzle would be finally explained, let's say. And one of the people I talked to, the three other people said, they kind of indicated, well, when the U.S. military decides we should know, or when the people who run UFOs or operate them, when they decide we're going to know, then we'll know. But Jerome Clark, who is really, in my opinion, kind of like the godfather of UFO research, and we've become friends over the phone, I asked him, and he said he thought that it would take about 40 to 50 years from now for the scientific community to come around to stop this nonsense about how if you look into UFOs, your career is going to be ruined, your tenure is going to be threatened or whatever. He thought about 40 to 50 years that they would really start a scientific basis to looking into UFOs and finally somehow come up with some answers. The problem is that if that's true, I can almost guarantee you it's not going to be an American scientist who does this. It's going to be someone in China or India. And that's sad.
Yeah, I agree. I agree with everything you said. It's not going to be soon, that's for sure. And it's a big opportunity that we are missing out on. I have a scientist as one of the women that has been an abductee, a scientist, and she has figured out that this one particular group that's being taken over and over is being taken apparently to drain their adrenal glands. Well, you never hear that. That's never talked about in the paranormal community. But she realizes that their symptoms and what happens to their bodies and the diseases that are brought on from this is what happens if you constantly have your adrenal glands drained over your lifetime. And she figured, you know, that's what they need. They need this substance for an experiment or whatever it is they're doing. And in my eyes, that's really something that we should know what's going on and figure out where that's heading, because obviously it could, you know, be something very important for mankind to deal with in the future, to understand what it is they're doing to the people they're doing it to, why they're here, and why they want us deaf, dumb, and blind to it. So, you know, we're missing 40, 50 years is a long time for this to continue, which it will, without being caught up to speed to what it is that we are being almost herded into or towards, what's going to become of us. And, you know, that's scary. And that's one of the warnings that people I talk to try to get across. Is you got to try very hard to hold on to your humanity, because they feel that may be something that's slipping away from us and becoming something else that maybe we don't want to be. And by us being so willingly led around, and now with technology just becoming like, you know, robotic.
Well, I was going to say to you, Chris, is do we even have 40 years at this point, given the downward spiral that we're kind of in as a culture?
I want to know the truth. I don't know. I don't. Maybe not.
Mac, I had somebody in the chat room that wanted to know the place in Russia that you had referred to earlier again.
Right. It's a place. It's called a number of different names. One of them is called the Perm Zone. PERM, the Perm Zone, and it's also referred to as the M Triangle, the letter M triangle, the M triangle. But it's in the vicinity of the Ural Mountains in Russia, which is a Russian friend of mine kind of compared to the Rockies in the United States. It's in an area where there are some villages, but there aren't very many people there. It's not near any really big cities. It's pretty much isolated. But it's the Perm Zone. Or the M Triangle is what it's mostly known as.
Okay. We typed that into the chat as well, because somebody had asked about that. When I said that earlier about do we have that much time, I'll counterpoise this argument by saying that based on my observation right now, I have a glimmer of hope because I do see people waking up. If they're waking up right now to anything, they're waking up to the fact that they've lived through a lifetime of being lied to by their government, by being cheated by their banks, seeing their financial system tanking. There's a lot of people out there that are asking hard questions right now, and the popular culture in UFO world, the buzzword is disclosure. I don't like it because it indicates that we would need to have a landing on the White House lawn, aliens coming out onto TV cameras, and some sort of mass exposure event, which I don't think is going to happen. But what I do think is happening is that disclosure is occurring as humans begin to wake up to their own reality and begin to look beyond that reality into what I'll call a spiritual zone, what I'll call a zone where they can get out of the boxes that they've been put into. What are both of your thoughts on the potential that we may see an accelerated, quote, disclosure?
You mean the government disclosure?
No, forget the government. I don't think...
The government and the military, people keep looking at the government and the military. What do they have to do with anything, folks? Who do you think is in control? Someone that's visiting us from another place in the universe? Or a human government that can't really get off of our own planet? Who do you think has a superior position here? Of course, it's not our military or our government. We're going to be told more or less, I think, what to do by who's controlling this whole situation, because otherwise we'd be in a whole different scenario. So the government and the military, forget about it. They have nothing to do between you and UFOs, except to maybe try to keep a peaceful coexistence. And that would be with the humans, because I don't think they can handle the aliens. It's my personal opinion from personal experience. It's a whole different, it's like an ant trying to fight you in your car. It's a complete different thing. Disclosure, I don't know. I don't know if the people are really able to do it. I also think that all the technology, cell phones, spending hours on Twitter, Facebook, all these things are ploys to keep you controlled and dumb and out of touch with reality. And the only way humans are going to advance or deal with any of these things is if they become attached again to their surroundings, other humans, and their reality. So I think see us being herded, as well as other people like me agree with this. In fact, they explained it to me. Herded into a place by our own willingness to be controlled by all this technology, computers. You have wireless things going on all the time and not a clue what's being fed into them, which means what's being fed into you. And this, I see, is our exit out of humanity and into something else. And the fact of disclosure or not disclosure, I think it's almost to the point where it doesn't matter if we don't soon get a hold of ourselves and kind of grow up and snap to it and starting to face the reality of all the things you talked about. Our government's collapsing, our economy is collapsing, our the healthcare, if that collapses, everybody's going to be dying at 50 again because they can't afford to figure out they have a terrible disease till it's too late. We're in trouble worldwide, and we don't realize it. Now, dumping a disclosure on top of that, I kind of think we're all have been manipulated to exactly where they want us, and it's almost very iffy if we'll ever get out of it. And I'm sorry that's such a bleak view of it, but I've been doing this a long time, and instead of it getting better, it got worse. So that's how I see it.
Mac, do you have something you would like to add to that?
Well, I agree. I think the situation is bleak now. I think as far as, you know, I know the government really doesn't count, but I know that when the people were putting an effort in to petition the White House to talk about, to come forward with any information they had, I forget exactly how they worded it, but I believe at the time that they worded it wrong. They actually said something along the lines of, did the U.S. government have any information of extraterrestrials visiting this planet? You see, if you're going to petition them like that, you have to have the exact wording. Or if you don't have the exact wording, that gives them the opportunity to turn you down. What they should have said was, does the U.S. government have any information of contact with beings other than human beings? Frankly, I believe that UFOs could be time travelers from our own future, coming back to see history as it's being made. Mm-hmm. And if you really kind of look into it, and I was forced to look into it writing UFOs a lot of time, that's the conclusion I came to. But if you have to, a disclosure through the government is never going to happen. You know, as much as there's a lot of people out there who are trying to go that route, they're never going to tell us the truth. So if it's not a government disclosure, then the only other people who are going to be able to disclose it are the people running UFOs themselves. And I just don't see that happen. I think that they're here to observe us. They're here all the time. They're not here secretly. People see them all the time. 1,000 UFO sightings are made around the world every month. I don't think they're going to reveal themselves to us anytime soon. So that gives us to the third step, which we were talking about before. It has to be some kind of a scientific inquiry. It has to be done by accredited scientists. And by the way, there is a college. It's called IMU. It's the International Metaphysical University. It's an online university. You can look it up on Google.
Yeah, I'm familiar with this.
Yeah, mm-hmm. They are starting to give courses on things like UFO investigations and the history of UFOs and so on, and they hope to become accredited soon, and maybe that will be something that, you know, that will take off, that we'll start having these courses actually accredited at colleges around the country, and you will have someone who will graduate with a doctorate in UFO research, you know. I think it's far off. I don't see any kind of a disclosure coming from the government or from the people, from the beings that run UFOs. It has to be a scientific endeavor, and it's so far off in the future. I hate to be, you know, as downcast as Chris is, but I just don't think it's going to be an American scientist or American scientific group that solves this puzzle. I think it's going to be someone over in China or India. And again, for the country that has done so many great things, this country has done so many great things, putting people on the moon, being one of the greatest. It's just sad that we're not going to be the ones that kind of break the case.
Yes, it's heartbreaking, actually. Almost unbelievable, but it's the case.
Mm-hmm. It's true.
And don't forget, we're not looking at, which is a tremendous problem. Mac did mention it, but we have the absolutely, come on, Randy, you know, the frauds and the fakes and the silly bored people that have nothing better to do out there just absolutely making the water so muddy that it's like quicksand, you can't even get through it, so that the few people out there that actually are trying to find the truth, the Macs, the Chris's, and the Randy's, that really want to know what's going on and get some answers, or at least try to protect people, are just swallowed up and flushed away with the rest of the maddening crowd. And as far, you know, we need that university in such a big way, because people write to me about going on their UFO adventures with them, meaning going out looking for UFOs, and tell me, you know, that they're going to, you know, get a couple of kegs there and go out on an isolated beach where there's no one else, and get blind drunk and flash lasers up in the sky so that hopefully a UFO can come. And I'm like, are you people out of your mind? And what if they do? And what if they come and not only show up, but take you and no one ever sees you again? Do you really think that's a good idea? And they get mad at me and they curse at me. We need some place to explain. If you're going to do this, you have to know what you're doing. We have to have trained people. We have to have people of science in there. We have to have some kind of logic with looking at this. It can't be a good time on a Friday night because you're bored. And it can't be people telling things, stories, making up stories, that things that never happened to them, that have millions of people reading them and believing them. You know, my first thing is, if you're going to claim something, did you really ever have any experience with it, or did you really research it? And the answers to them for most people are no. So, you know, that all, it's such a dirty mess out there. They're trying to just keep alive and get a breath of air once in a while. It's almost impossible.
Let me.
But that hurts us terribly.
Yeah, it does. And see, the maddening thing about this is we're dealing with phenomena, but it's not one thing. And this is a conversation that I've been having with people, both on the air and off. What we've rolled into the UFO phenomena seems to be many different phenomena. And separating it out and determining, for instance, the phenomena in Russia. What is that? Is that attributable to extraterrestrial, or is it something within the Earth itself? Is there a vortex, a dimensional shift? Is there an energetic that's going on? Is this something that we can test, that we can duplicate? And Mac, I'd have to ask you, in writing about these different places around the world, did you find consistent evidence, for instance, of energy patterns that might be appearing in these areas, and any particular type of statistical data that gives you any sense at all that this is a phenomena that we can put our finger on?
Yes and no. I can tell you two things that kind of matched up unintentionally in the book. We were talking earlier about Christopher O'Brien, who's a researcher who's written a number of books of the St. Louis Valley in Colorado, where not only are UFOs seen on a regular basis, but they also have all these really crazy things going on there. They have, you know, these kind of invisible creatures that come into people's homes. You can't see them, but they leave shadows on the wall. There's a town out there that people have seen these lights rising up out of the cemetery for years, and they even went so far as to ask everyone in the town to turn their lights off to see if the lights were still there, you know, that they were not some reflection, and the lights were still there. People have seen flying humanoids out there. They've seen military airplanes disappear. And it's just such a really crazy place. And what's interesting about it is that it's on a it's on a plate line where two plates, you know, in the crust of the Earth are coming together.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? And Christopher O'Brien seems to think that, and he's done more research on this than me, but he's come to the conclusion that a lot of these very strange events, UFOs and all these other unusual paranormal events, seem to happen a lot in these areas where you have these plates coming together. Now, his chapter is the second chapter in the book, and I did the research in the book chronologically, let's say. So now I dealt with him in the second chapter. Now I get to, I think, the ninth chapter of the book, and it's about this place called Hengyang in China. And what that is that someone was looking at Google Earth one day, a scientist in Germany, and noticed these odd shapes in the ground in the area of Hengyang in China. And what it was an exact recreation of a place 2,000 miles to the west on the Chinese-Indian border called Akachin. Okay, now I know I'm tossing out a lot of odd names here, but bear with me. In Hengyang, the Chinese government has built an exact model of this place 2,000 miles to the west called Akachin. Akachin is in the Himalayas, and in 1962, India and China fought a war there. We don't really hear about it very much in the United States because it was going on at the exact same time that the Cuban Missile Crisis was going on. But they fought a war in the Himalayas for reasons people still can't understand, because it's one of the worst places in the world. This place, Akachin, is also a place where the Earth's plates are hitting each other, thus the Himalayan mountains. The people there see UFOs so often that when you go to the villages there and you ask the kids to draw something they see every day, they draw UFOs. They draw UFOs in the sky. The people went back 500 years and found letters from missionaries talking about UFOs in this one place, Akachin, which is in very close to the Himalayas. So the question is why is the Chinese military building an exact recreation, a scaled-down model of Akachin, 2,000 miles away, why are they building this incredibly elaborate model of a place where lots of UFOs are seen? You know, I don't know if that answers your question or not, but it just goes back to what I was saying and also what Chris was saying earlier, how scientists are coming to the United States, learning here, going back to their home countries, and you'll tell me that the Chinese military must know something about UFOs for them to put all this time and effort into building this exact recreation of this place out in the middle of nowhere that they fought a war against India years ago over reasons people don't know.
That's very interesting. And you know, Mac, in China, it's different. If someone in China sees a UFO, they report it to the government, and they're not scoffed at or laughed at.
Yep.
Right? It's accepted.
Yep.
And that's
Russia as well.
The lesson we did not write.
They told back in the 1980s when there was still the Soviet Union, and I'm sorry to interrupt you there, but the Brezhnev, who was the head of the Soviet Union, told every person in the military, 3.5 million people at the time in the Soviet military, if you see a UFO, we want you to write an extensive report on it and to send it in. And with one flick of the switch, all of a sudden Russia had the largest number of people reporting UFOs. They were curious about them. They wanted to know what they were. It's interesting how the U.S. military takes the opposite, attack. They threaten people. How many times did I hear while I was researching these two books, especially UFOs in wartime, where veterans came out and said, I saw a UFO, I was told never to talk about it, or, I'd be breaking security rules, I'd lose my pension, so on and so forth. That's why I think that I don't think the U.S. military knows what UFOs are. I think they know a lot more about them than that they are saying, but I have a feeling that they really don't know what they are, but what they are knowing, that's what they're trying to keep secret. That's why they try to keep the people who are in the military who see UFOs, they try to keep them quiet. I don't think the Russians know anything about them. That's why they allow their military people to speak openly about them.
I tend to go with the side that says there are levels of understanding within the military themselves. I believe, just based on even the documentation that has been released, and based on talking with former military people, that at some level or another, yes, there is an acknowledgement of this, yes, there has been contact with it, yes, we have received technology from alien beings. And that's probably the most difficult thing to parse out, because on top of all of this are a lot of legends, a lot of folklore that's gone into the UFO chronology over the years. What we were talking about earlier, Chris, we don't have a clear line of evidence for any of this information, and most of it has been distorted by deliberate disinfo agents, people who either blow things up into spectacular dimensions or obfuscate the few bare facts that we have. And I think that's probably the biggest problem we deal with. There is some confirmation of that, but it's very scant right now, and most of it has been completely blown out of proportion.
There's something that's just not right. As we talk about this and I sit and listen to us all, there's just something not right. Maybe we're missing it. Maybe there's an organization in the world who does know, and those were like the crazy people that were in Plum Island and part of what took and came and annoyed a lot of them, intruded on a lot of Long Islanders in the 60s. And maybe that's why when I was hurt the first time when I was a young teenager, the military Air Force base at the end of the island sent in a high-ranking official from the base to threaten my parents and examined me really quickly, even scraped my skin and took it with them, but threatened my parents that this never happened, you're not going to talk about this, and like, don't make us come back here type of attitude that frightened the daylights out of my parents. I mean, all these things just aren't sitting well. There's something we're missing. Perhaps it is, there is a overseeing organization or something in the world of humans that does know exactly what's going on, are working with these things, these beings, or us from the future, whatever it may be, because I don't know what it is. Wish I did. It has nothing to do with the rest of the governments. Maybe all the governments actually are pretty unaware of what's actually happening. But I do think there is some kind of group or organization, possibly private, possibly a combination of things. I'm not sure, but we're missing something because it's going on all over too many times, too many people involved. Look at the millions of people that go missing that just weren't runaways or, you know,
exactly.
A parent
mm-hmm.
taking a kid. Mm-hmm. There's too much going on. It doesn't add up. So, you know, as I go along in life, I realize we're missing something, and it's something that frightens the daylights out of me, because I realize it's very big, and that it's there, and that it's hurting people. I was one of them. I get to a point where I'm almost ready to knock on a door and say, well, I think this is it, and I know if I say what I really think, I could end up never being heard from again. So there's just a limit to what I would say, and those like me will say, because we're smart enough to know that's a cliff you don't want to jump off of, and then you back away. So, you know, what I'm saying is I write as much as I can, and of course it's difficult because nobody wants to publish people like me. Max Lucky, he started long ago, he got in. Me, nobody wants to hear from. So I'll go up to a point. And believe me, I have a lot of things I should be telling people. But past that, what I really think, I'll never tell you. Because I could never be seen again. And I've never said that before, but I'm saying it tonight. So you got to be careful when you're doing this, too.
Well, especially where you're coming from an experience or perspective, Chris. And this is the problem with people who are what we would call contactees, abductees, experiencers on any level, is that they take risks. And some of the people that I've interviewed know this, that once they went public, things kind of really, pardon the term, turned to shit for them. I personally,
right.
Financially, in a lot of other ways, that once they spoke up, their life did not get better.
That's right.
Yeah, and you wonder that level of suppression. It's not like it was printed on the top page, the top column of the New York Times the next day. But even just the leakage out into the media, given the media control that we have on the internet now, creates what I would call the sucking sound of people who do not want to come forward anymore.
I can give you just a little bit of my experience in that. When the book came out, when UFOs and Wartime came out, my publisher set me up with a number of, you know, radio interviews similar to this. To talk about it. Now, where we live north of Boston. We've lived in the same house for almost 20 years, my wife and I. And we've had the same telephone, landline. And in those 20 years, I'm going to say that we have had trouble with the phone, let's say not working, maybe twice in that 20 years. Okay, yeah. Now you know where I'm going with
this. I know where you're going. Chris and I are real-time witnesses to this phenomenon.
And this is amazing because this has really happened to me. I tend to kind of look at things logically. But I'm going to say that in the 6 months of heavy promotion for the book, that there was at least 10 times when I was on, let's say, a show like this, or talking to people for research for the second book, where all of a sudden the phone just cuts out or dies or is filled with static or suddenly you're not talking anymore.
Yeah.
And you know, the first time it happened, I thought, well, haha, that's funny. You know, second time, well, you know, but when it happens the sixth and seventh and eighth time, you get to thinking, well, you know, these can't be coincidences. And the strangest part was that I spoke in October at a MUFON gathering down in Virginia. It's the only UFO speech I've given. And I happened to be talking to a friend of mine a couple days before. He was going to come up from Washington, D.C., to kind of hang out with me and to see me give the speech. He just happens to work for the FBI. he and I were on the phone talking about, you know, what I was going to talk about. He's talking to me from Quantico, Virginia, which is a large FBI installation down there. And we get cut off. And I call him back, and his first words to me was, he says, you know, I think your phone's being tapped. Now, this is someone at an FBI facility telling me this, and I was on the phone with him talking, and that's when we lost communication. So, you know, I don't know what it means. I can't imagine that there is someone out there in the government who is listening in on little old me, because I'm new to this field. You know, I'm not well known in this field. I didn't really turn over any expose any top secret information in the book. I was just, you know, basically repeating stuff that is historical fact. I have no idea why they would be interfering with my phone conversations, but someone was.
Well,
Mac, let me just jump in here. My phone has been tapped. My computers have been blown up. My emails have all been hacked. And it's been going on for years. It's a pain in the butt. And I mean, my phone's been tapped. I have to have security come in and help me. I've had to change all my phones, all my things. I have no more wireless routers or anything like that in my house. It's too easy for them to get into. And Mac, what makes you think it's the government? And Randy, tell them what happened. Randy and I did the last show we did. Randy really got me going, boy. And I was just on a roll. And tell them what happened to your computer.
We had a total meltdown of my computer. I actually literally had to buy a new computer. The computer would no longer boot into Microsoft Windows. It was completely slimed. It overheated. Honestly, you could iron a shirt with this computer. It was amazing what happened. And it was right on the air. I mean, it was recorded. It was happening. We had horrific problems with Skype, with phone lines. Everything in that show, there was buzzing and clicking. And this is not new. People who have listened to the show for a long time have heard interviews I've done where there is audible interference going on, where phone lines drop out, voices have popped in on phone calls. I had a phone call with a friend of mine this weekend. She's online right now, too. We had a very interesting phone conversation, and literally we were being not just listened to, but you could hear them. They were making themselves very well known. Weird,
yeah, like they grunt.
Mm-hmm. Weird electrical weird electrical anomalies occur. You see, it doesn't matter how big you are, because right now, every time we put something out there, we're not just having a conversation that's going to vaporize and go away. We're recording it. We're going to put it on a website. It's going to go to YouTube. It's going to be on the record. So they are paying attention, and they have very powerful eavesdropping, listening, computer-type things that can parse conversations, look for buzzwords, and create all kinds of havoc as we're doing these conversations. Why? Because we're swimming against the tide right now.
Well, it's interesting that it must be very far-reaching. I know that the NSA, National Security Agency, which is actually the largest U.S. security agency, intelligence agency, it's not the CIA, they run Pine Gap down in Australia.
Absolutely.
And what Pine Gap is, it's funny because a lot of very odd things have happened to Pine Gap. But, you know, what it is and what the government, you know, admits that they do there is that they have these supercomputers that can, they're not eavesdropping in on phone conversations or email or anything. What they do is they're able to filter every phone conversation that comes out of China looking for specific words. And if these specific words pop up, then they, let's say, investigate them a little closer. And
they sniff them, right.
Right. So you know, is what is happening to us, is it that UFOs or some kind of contact or some kind of link to UFOs is now in these filters of the NSA, and when we start talking about it, our phones go haywire? Everyone's phone doesn't go haywire, but it just seems like people talking about UFOs, and in these instances that I was talking about, and I get a feeling that my story is mild to stories you guys have heard, is it's only when you're talking about UFOs that something goes wrong with the phone.
Well, it can be UFOs, it can be mind control operations, it can be certain esoteric things that are going on within the government, satanic ritual abuse. I could go on and on. But
it could just be an organization, a private, very large private organization that wants to control all of this information, that has the power and whatever needed behind them
profiling.
To connect people. Right. Because I have one of the contactees, you call them, I call them abductees,
sure.
That I have never had a phone conversation with this person without it being broken into and aren't being disconnected. Sometimes up to 10 times with us trying to, like, maybe just talk about getting tea and coffee together, never was allowed to have a conversation with her. And it didn't matter if I was on Skype or a landline or a cell phone or a wireless home, you know, home phone, didn't matter. We were constantly broken into and disconnected. So, you know, after a while, you get the hint. But they also have to understand that people like us that have had to deal with what we have had to deal with in life have gotten pretty tough. And if we can live through what we've lived through, you're not going to scare us by disconnecting our phones. And they don't seem to get that yet.
Mac, one of the things I wanted to tell you, too, you mentioned about Pine Gap being controlled by the NSA. On my website, there's an interview I did with a whistleblower from the UK named Barry King, and I've gotten to know Barry very well over the last few years. He was actually part of a British super soldier project in the 1960s, and he did an interview with me and talked about the NSA facility at a place called Peacemore. Did you happen to run into Peacemore when you were doing research for your book?
No, there was a couple NSA sites in the UK, but I'm not familiar with that place, no.
Yeah, the two that we've documented the most are Peacemore and Rendlesham, the Rendlesham Forest incident.
Right.
But what he talked about in the interview and what was going on at Peacemore, that was directly under the control of the same people who were also running the Montauk Project in the United States. They were parallel projects.
Mm.
So you had not only what we will call UFO, ET type activity, but you also had an ongoing mind control program running in parallel, which takes this conversation to a whole other level when you get to that place. And trust me.
Yeah, and then not good things either.
No, and I'm not being sensationalistic about this. When I started doing these shows, I resisted doing this information for years. And it kept coming up and coming up and coming up. And as I went down the rabbit hole, I was not trying to be spectacular about this. It was like spectacular was being shoved in my face doing this.
Well, it's just that there needs to be more people that want to know. That want to know what's real and what isn't. And we just don't have that.
Right, because we have an information lockout and we've got cognitive dissonance on a mass basis.
And we have the Hollywood fantasy covering brush that takes and distorts everything so much that I give an A+ to those who've completely destroyed the ability for all these subjects to go anywhere but being unknown. Do you understand? They've really locked it up and shut it down and shoved it in a place where it's going to stay for a long time.
Right. You know, it's interesting that you bring up Hollywood because it would seem like a dichotomy, or if that's the correct use of this word, is that, you know, the last in the past 15 years, I think 6 or 7 of the top movies, maybe it's 5 or 6 of the top movies, have had something, they've been science fiction movies, and some of them have to do with UFOs. I mean, going back a little further, you had Close Encounters, you had Independence Day, War of the Worlds. You would think, and these are all big movies, people go see them, and they're billion-dollar movies, some of them. You would think that that would show an interest in, let's say, the movie-going public, at least, in UFOs and trying to get to the bottom of UFOs. If they're going to see fictional movies about UFOs, then why aren't they more interested in finding out what UFOs are, you know?
That's a good question.
Maybe when people go and see them and know that they're just made-up stories, that makes them tend to believe that nothing about UFOs are true. But I have to look at it the other way. You know, I think a lot of people are interested in UFOs, yet we have this problem of ridicule that, you know, if you report it to the newspaper, we had a case here in this little town we live in, a guy who saw a UFO over Route 95. This was a few years ago. He happened to report it to the newspaper, and his bad luck was that it happened on April Fool's, on April 1st. And everyone thought that, you know, of course, it's an April Fool's joke, okay? I talked to the guy twice on the phone, and he was dead serious about seeing it, and then it turned out someone playing golf that day saw it too, but, you know, the newspaper had already moved on, if you know what I mean. The ridicule factor in this country, that's one of the saddest things there is, because if people were more forthcoming, especially people in the military, I think we would be having a different discussion right now, to say the truth.
Well, if you look at the history, and a lot of these movies have been filmed by a small core of filmmakers, and largely George Lucas and Steven Spielberg and their associates. And if you look at the movies they've made, they've been all over the map with them. We've gone from the scary aliens of, what was it, Cowboys and Aliens, the movie that came out last year. We had cute little green E.T., you know, with his E.T. Go Home thing. What they've done is they've stratified the opinion of the public along the lines of the most extreme, biases that you could hold, rather than giving us a balanced picture of something that could be. I mean, you get the woo-woo phenomena of the people that think ETs are going to come down and save them from themselves and give them money, too, while they're at it.
Right.
And then
the meaning of life, right?
And then you have the one that's going to eat your face off, and the truth is somewhere in between all of this.
And look what they did to Men in Black.
Yes. They made it ridiculous. And if you ask Nick Redfern does not think it's ridiculous at all.
Interesting. But you could make a great movie, a great dramatic, serious movie about the Men in Black, because there's so many Men in Black instances that if you just lined them up and told them in chronological order, it would blow people's minds, you know. But what do? They make it into, it's at the very least a comedy. And, you know, not really that good one, that good of one either. So, I don't know whether it's a plot, you know, to kind of ridicule these things in the entertainment world too. I don't know, but it just seems to be all kind of working against us at this point.
Mac, did I see an article online that was attributed to you about, Hollywood people who had UFO sightings?
Yes, I have kind of a side job for TrueTV.
Right, yeah.
.com, and one of the things they assigned to me was the celebrities who had seen UFOs. And one of the most fascinating ones, well, Jackie Gleason, he's another,
Really interesting. Tell this story. This is great.
Well, we have a chapter in the book about it, and I had heard this story before, but I just really looked into it, you know, in a big way when we were doing the book. Jackie Gleason and Richard Nixon were friends.
Mm-hmm.
They don't seem like they should have been friends, because Gleason was... They were hard. Gleason was this boisterous, you know, kind of bigger-than-life guy, you know, heavy drinker, they had a lot of fun. In fact, he had a hotel suite in Hollywood that he gave so many raucous parties that the hotel made him soundproof it, or they were going to kick him out, okay? Always a kind of a good-time guy, okay? Nixon was so uptight that when he was home alone, he used to dress in a suit coat and tie, all right? So these guys should not have been friends, yet they were friends. Gleason had this lifelong interest in UFO in the paranormal. He had a house in upstate New York, or I should say just outside of New York City, that was shaped like a UFO. That's how much he was into reading about UFOs. Nixon heard about this as they got to know each other. They were playing golf one day, and Gleason always kind of kept it under the radar because he didn't want to be in the National Enquirer, you know, kind of made fun of as being a UFO kook. But he did mention it to Nixon, and as the story goes, Nixon showed up at his house one night down in Florida. They lived in the same part of Florida, just south of Miami, Key Biscayne in that area. Nixon showed up at his door one night by himself, which shocked Gleason. But, you know, and that shocked me. But then, you know, you look into it, and it turns out that Nixon was always trying to dodge his Secret Service detail. He did it many times. He would just go out driving by himself. For what reason, who knows. But anyway, he shows up at Gleason's house. He says, let me take you somewhere. They drive to Homestead Air Force Base. This is in the 70s. Homestead Air Force Base really isn't there anymore because it was blown away by Hurricane Andrew. But they go into Homestead, drive on to the base, go to this hangar, which is heavily guarded. They go in, and Nixon, it is said, showed Gleason not only pieces of a crashed flying saucer, but also the frozen bodies of the occupants. Now, it's, you know, as we were saying, there's a lot of noise out there in the UFO community, stories that people just make up, whether they're disinformation agents or not. Or people, as you said, are just bored and they say anything and people read it and they believe it. So this sounds like a crazy story. But as it turns out, at the time, Gleason and his wife, her name was Beverly, they were kind of, let's say, on the outs. And they had separated shortly after this happened. She said that he came home from this trip with Nixon, and he wasn't the same for 3 weeks. It freaked him out to actually see this. So what happened was they separated, and she gave a interview to either Vogue or Cosmopolitan or something, and she happened to mention this in the interview. Jackie Gleason found out about it. He was so mad at her for kind of telling the story about him and Nixon seeing the UFOs, that was the last straw, and he finally wound up divorcing her. Now, it's funny that something having to do with UFOs would come into kind of a high-profile domestic dispute. But the other interesting thing was Gleason told very few people that he had this interest in UFOs, but he did tell some people. And we have it in there, a scene happened in a famous restaurant in New York called Toot Shores. Toot Shore was a guy who was a good friend of Jackie Gleason. Jackie Gleason was in Toot Shore's restaurant talking to a guy named Bob Considine, who was a very famous columnist for New York newspapers way back when. Okay, Considine did not believe in UFOs. Gleason was an avid believer in UFOs. And they're sitting there, and they're having this, let's say, friendly argument, where Gleason is trying to convince Considine that, you know, people in the military see UFOs, presidents know about UFOs, so on and so forth. In walks a guy named, his nickname was Rosie O'Donnell. He was he was the head of the U.S. Air Force in the Pacific at the very end of World War II. He was one of the people who was close to the atom bomb drop and many other bombing missions over Japan. He was very, very high up in the Air Force. He happened to overhear this conversation between Bob Considine and Jackie Gleason. He walked over to them, gently interrupted them, and said to Bob Considine, "Jackie's right." That to me is, there you go. That's one of the highest confirmations you will ever get from someone way, way up in the Air Force. And all it is just true words. Jackie's right. It tells me that the military knows more about UFOs than they're telling us. But I don't really think that they know exactly what they are. I can be, I'm hoping someday to be persuaded that they do. I just have a feeling they know more than we do, but I don't think they know the whole story.
They're not in the loop, as people would think they are.
Right, exactly.
I think it's something else that got it all the information right. Yeah, that's a great story.
Mac, did you? I'm sorry. Go ahead, Chris.
No, it's just an interesting story. Well, I have to talk to Mac someday on the phone and add something to that I find very interesting. But
I'd like to be a fly on the wall.
And I'm not
going to
say online
that
I just happen to know about these people. But that's really very, you know, interesting. And Jackie Gleason suffered. So that set up also another signal for people. If you see it, don't say it.
Right.
Because,
isn't it interesting,
you know, look what happened to him.
It makes you wonder, though, if he was predisposed to believing anyway, what was his experience that led to that, especially in that time in that generation?
Yeah, I mean, very interesting because, you know, he really had a rough upbringing, that guy. You know, from Brooklyn, broken home, one or two siblings died at a young age. He was basically abandoned, really was out on his own at the age of 15. Very tough guy. Funny guy, but also a very tough guy. Why he would suddenly, why he would have an interest in UFOs, who knows? Because, see, he didn't want to tell very many people about it because he didn't want to be ridiculed once again in the Hollywood columnists like Walter Winchell, had a hopper, you know, that would ruin someone like that.
Right.
National Enquirer. But, you know, he was interested in them and believed them to the point that he had a house built in the shape of a UFO. That's a good question. It's a very good question. How did he get interested in UFOs? I don't have the answer. I wish I did.
Yeah, but observationally, I would say the predisposition comes from an experience somewhere, a sensitivity towards it. Oh, did you encounter the story about John Lennon?
Yes. It's not in the book, but we did it in the True TV piece that we did.
Yeah.
He was on his roof in New York City and actually saw a UFO, and he was, I don't know how high he was, either physically or, you know, mentally. But
mentally.
The UFO actually went by him. It was below him.
He was actually naked on a balcony.
Yeah, right. Yeah,
time.
Something yeah. along those lines. And the interesting thing, too, is that when we only did like a small piece for the True TV piece, but on Lennon. But it turns out that there's a place across the, that would be the Hudson River in New Jersey.
Mm-hmm.
Not too far away from where that happened, and it's a ball field or something where people see UFOs there all the time, similar to the one that John Lennon saw.
And I'm guessing there's a base near there.
There's probably a base. You know, there's always a military base nearby, these things, always.
Yeah, the most interesting one I saw in your article was Mick Jagger. That was interesting as well.
He and his girlfriend, Marianne Faithfull, they went camping. And I think the strangest thing about that was that, can you imagine Mick Jagger camping? I get a feeling they weren't in a pup tent, you know. But they were out in the woods somewhere. And, and they saw UFOs and made a lifelong believer in Mick Jagger of UFOs.
That's very interesting.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things that I've been looking at for a number of years, and I've not found enough material to even be able to write an article, much less a book, is people within the rock and roll field that have had experiences with paranormal and UFO. It's kind of embedded, a lot of them, experientially in their song lyrics and things. And
well, wasn't there, Randy, a whole band that was supposedly taken? Some famous band, and I can't remember who they are.
I can't remember it either. Gosh.
They were traveling, I think, in England, I think it was, and the whole group was taken. And they're very famous, and I cannot, for the life of me, bring that name of their band into view in my mind.
Anybody
yeah, maybe
in the
somebody
audience,
will know.
Help us. Yeah. Because I do remember the story, and I'm lost for detail right now. But I guess, you know, what I'm saying is, we have had clues all along. We've had people embedded in our culture that have believed this. I don't know. Do you guys remember, I guess, 1960s, the tabloid magazines? And they would do, like, these kind of fake alien things on the front pages of whatever. I remember as a little kid seeing these tabloids because I remember my mom.
World Weekly News was a
one
tabloid.
One of them, yes, yes. My mom would make these little comments about them that was, you know, funny, not funny. But I remember seeing, like, one where they had an E.T. standing next to John F. Kennedy in a wheelchair, slightly aged. And the weird thing about that is that Kennedy himself apparently, if we, you know, Robert Morningstar has reported this, that Kennedy himself was very much a believer in UFOs. And I flash back on that picture now and remember that, and I think it's odd in a way how somehow or another there may have been a grain of truth in all that.
Well, you're going to find a lot of the information that is, even in the Hollywood movies, there's always a small grain of truth in there.
Yeah, yeah.
So they do give you a little salt and pepper of what might really be, and then they smash it and cover it and fluff it and make it ridiculous or just brainwash you to think something else. It's, as I said, there's something that we are all missing. I think there's an ultimate society, group, organization, secret government, there's something, or such a base of these beings here already controlling it, that we are completely and totally dominated and controlled about these subjects, to leave them do as they please, in their fashion, at their own speed, and kind of just let the sheep run and live and play and, you know, go out and eat on the grass and just be out of their way. I mean, it's just like no other way to look at it at this point.
It doesn't make me wonder,
Chris,
what you've uncovered or what you believe about the so-called Greta Treaty. In other words, this supposed treaty that was made between, I believe, either Truman or Eisenhower and an alien group who were, basically, it was technology for bodies.
Well, they were agreed to take so many of us and leave the rest of us alone. That's the long and the short of it. And because they needed us for whatever they do need us for. And I think that there's also different groups that use us for different things. Some are used possibly for, I don't know, their DNA. Others may be used to try to transform them or drain their adrenals. Others may be taken and eaten. Others taken and you never see them again. I don't know, but I think all of it's going on, not just one thing or two. I think lots of things are going on, and we don't have any degree of really worldwide protection over it because of the technology difference. And I do think that that treaty was probably very possible, and that's why they did put limits on it. And that's why we seem to, every year, have so many people missing, so many UFO reports, so many contactees, abductees, and it doesn't get completely out of control because they agreed to live within that realm of existence with these beings, and they're sticking to it. And it's obvious. I've known all my life, since I've been 3 years old, there's something else here with us because they were messing with me. So, you know, the whole question has always been who, why, and how is it possible that, you know, nobody protects you? You know, your government, your family, nothing can protect you. If somebody kidnapped your four-year-old, harmed it, and gave it back to you, you'd go to the police and it would be a big deal. It would be all over the papers. Every police force, the FBI, everything would be out looking for this person, and you'd put them in jail. Yet it happens around the world all the time to people, and they are laughed at, ridiculed, and warned, don't talk about it again. So, you know, it's a vicious problem that doesn't, I don't see an end to it. Not in my lifetime.
I'm curious, Mac, if you encountered any of the MJ-12 material, the Majestic 12, in the course of doing your interview, because this actually goes back into that period post-World War II, 1946, and what was going on around the bases in the country at the time, which included investigations by Central Intelligence of UFOs that were flying over different Air Force bases, and the whole sphere of activity that was coming out, which was supposedly connected to what was called this Majestic Group, or MJ-12. Are you familiar with any of that, Mac?
Yeah, I'm familiar with it. I didn't put it in the book because I just couldn't find, how should I say it?
Good documentation.
The documentation, yeah, that would be needed.
Yes.
You know, if I mean to kind of qualify it to be in the book, you know.
Yeah, it's
and they're all dead too, aren't they? I think they're all gone. So you could.
Yeah, they must be by now.
Yeah.
Yeah. But within that particular nugget, which ties into the whole so-called Greta Treaty, which I can find no evidence for as well, appears to be some truth. There are some documents that were exposed, but not enough to give you, again, we can't get a chain of evidence, which is the questions that should have been asked of our government instead of the ridiculous poll that was put on WhiteHouse.gov. We should have requested, we should have petitioned, we should have demanded from the government unredacted, unblacked out documents that are a chain of evidence as to what actually occurred in that period of 1946 to, I will say, the early 1970s in regards to documenting UFO activity and potentially extraterrestrial activity.
Right. Yeah, it's all in how you ask for it. See, that's the thing, is that we know that they put everything into different compartments where, you know, higher authority, I'm talking about the Pentagon now, higher authority, you know, has plausible deniability because they're not told about these things, you know. So you have to, if there's any kind of petition to the government, to the White House or whatever is ever going to work, you have to get the exact wording of what you want, and how will we know that, you know, some office that on the door it says, special logistics unit. How do we know? That might be the UFO group. But if we don't know what we're asking for, we're never going to get it. You went back, you mentioned, you know, the president's Kennedy, and whether he believed in UFOs or not. I read once that when a new president takes office, as soon as you're sworn in, one of the first things you do is that you get this briefing by the National Security Council, mm-hmm. which is basically the CIA and the NSA and so on. And supposedly every president is told two or three things that day that he can ever talk about, you know, that they are just these enormous secrets. You know, they may or may not come up during his presidency. Supposedly during every presidency, every four-year term, a president gets one or two jolts in the middle of the night, you know, the phone call, this has happened, that has happened. Sometimes we hear about it, sometimes we don't. But I got to think that, I mean, wouldn't it just stand to reason that one of the two or three things that the CIA lays on you 10 minutes after being sworn president, that they would have to do with UFOs? I mean, would you be surprised if that was the case?
Not at all, no. I assume that.
And now you know why they all almost go gray overnight.
Right, well, yeah, I mean, they showed Obama the other day, and he has literally gone gray overnight, you know? I mean, the stresses of the job must be unbelievable.
Well, they're managed, they're handled. I don't know if you heard it, I announced over the intro to the show tonight, the interview that I did over the weekend, last weekend with a top-level State Department translator who was in the Bush and Clinton administrations, Fred Burks. And in that interview, what Burks said was basically, yeah, these guys are managed, they're handled constantly. There's different personalities, but they are constantly kept on a treadmill as well. So in a lot of ways, they're being handled and the information that they're given is being managed. So why would you be surprised as we come down the food chain that everything we are experiencing and everything that we're hearing is being managed as well?
Everything in the government these days is the information flow. Everything is managed. Nothing is spontaneous. Nothing is comes out unless it's checked, you know, by 50, 60 people at least, or maybe five or six. Everything that all started with the Gulf War, in my opinion. You know, everyone thought that they were watching the Gulf War on TV.
Embedded media.
Right. Embedded media means, you know, it's basically censored media. And that has been transferred over to everything that the government does. And it doesn't make any difference who's in there. You know, they know that it's easier for them to manage the news than it is to react to it when, you know, excuse my French, but when the shit hits the fan. So,
yeah.
Final round here. We're going to close it out tonight. I was looking for a final question, but we've gone through this on a number of different angles that I didn't anticipate tonight. And what was cool about this, I think, is, Mac, we got a better view of your kind of unfolding as you come into this whole new area that you began with your first book, UFOs in Wartime. The you're sort of in process. You're sort of in this place where you're kind of being, in some ways, forced to deal with things in a reality zone that probably you wouldn't have even dealt with in fiction. Is that kind of the ride you're on right now?
Yes. You're exactly right. I mean, I'm really someone who's just kind of sticking his head in the door, to tell you the truth. And I have run into a lot of people who, like Chris, and she just happened to be one of the first people I talked about this when the book first came out. And people like Nick Redfern, who you've talked about, and Chase Kletsky, and Jerry Clark, and people like that. In fact, I dedicate my book to those guys because they helped me put it together. But what I'm realizing is that there's a lot of people out there, serious people like Chris, who have pretty much devoted their lives to this. You know, I'm just like, kind of, as I say, I'm someone who's kind of looking in. But there are people out there, this is their lives, and they're on this pursuit. They're on this search for truth. And it's just really amazing to me. And I didn't take it as seriously as I do now because of the personalities of some of the people involved.
Mm-hmm.
As Chris said before, and as you said, Randy, is that one of the most destructive things, one of the biggest roadblocks we have, is all that noise out there, the people making stuff up, and then people just want to believe it, and it becomes fact. You know, we have to somehow, and I don't know how you do it, and maybe it's impossible, but it has to, somehow you have to filter all that out and really concentrate on, you know, what we believe are facts, what things have happened that people can say, okay, I was a witness to this, I have this document, so on and so forth. If you concentrate on the things that you can really sink your teeth into, I think that gets us closer to finally figuring out what this is all about, at least educating ourselves more. I'll just say this real quick. One of my pet projects is that we want the military to give amnesty to any person in the military who has seen a UFO and who was told not to talk about it. How about that? How about if the Pentagon came across with something like that? Because can you imagine the tidal wave of information we would get?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, it might be pie in the sky, but something like that to me is heading in the right direction to figuring what UFOs are all about.
Every pilot should be allowed to report a UFO without fearing what it'll do to his job.
Right.
And we don't have that.
It's just the opposite. If they do report it, they're probably going to lose their job.
And they have probably the best information that is needed to get a hook on this, yet we censor them. It's terrible.
Yep, I agree.
By the way, Mac, one of the biggest stories that I have, and I have newspaper articles and everything at the time that was printed about it, was a huge UFO sighting in Bayport, New York.
Oh, really?
In the 60s, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It was one of the best, too. A lot of people saw it, and it was an amazing sighting.
We've actually had our history in our lifetime sanitized. People don't remember, even in their own areas where they've lived for their lives, UFO flaps that occurred. That's true here. There were UFO flaps in this area when I was a kid. And that has all been sanitized now, except for a few honest researchers who have gone out and bothered to get the archives before they're also purged. So I think the takeaway from the show tonight, and it was completely different from what I thought it was going to be, which is wonderful, was we got a chance to talk to Mac a little bit more about stuff tonight that's kind of his growth aspect as he goes through the process, because like you said, Mac, you've stuck your head in the door. Well, that door goes into some very deep places, and it's going to be an interesting trip for you, as it, I think it has been for any of us that have gone into this area of inquiry.
Well, it's been real interesting so far, I can tell you that. I mean, between what's happened with the phone and the people I've met and just some of the things that I've, you know, come upon in the research. As I said before, I thought I was interested in it, but I didn't realize how seriously some people take it. And I'm just, what I come away with is just the people I've met and how dedicated they are, you know, and I really wish that people like politicians in Washington. If only they were as dedicated to their job as some of these UFO researchers I've met are dedicated to their job, we wouldn't be in the mess we're in.
And don't forget, there's people like me, and we didn't choose this as much
That's
as
right.
it chose us.
That's right.
We were chosen. And once you are dragged into this, kicking and screaming against your will, and go through all of this and see so much, then you become obsessed to try to get people to pay attention. And I think that there are many people like me, and that they cannot help themselves. They are, but no, wait, listen, this happened, you have to listen to me. And we eventually spend our lives figuring out ways to get that across.
Well, I want to commend both of you, because in your own ways, and you're very unique, and yet you've complemented each other beautifully in the show tonight. You're doing important work. Mac, you bring to the table the credibility of a published author who's making a serious transition. And Chris, you have continued to document amazing things on your blog, on your websites, and through all the work that you've contributed as well as a true journalist in this realm of inquiry where there are very few journalists. And my hat's off to you. This is not the last time we'll talk, for sure. I want to have both of you back. Mac, certainly by the time your book comes out, but hopefully sooner. I also want the listeners to go over to Chris's blog. The links are on offplanetradio.net, right under the marquee for tonight's show, and they'll be posted with the show as well. And Mac's website as well, which is macmaloney.com. Take a look at the article on Chris's site, Lost Time, Events, and the Life of Diane. I read this earlier this week, and I was quite blown away by this. This would be an entire show in itself. It's amazing.
Yeah, it would.
It's amazing reporting.
Yeah, that drained me, that story. It drained the life out of me. It was so difficult to write. It was such an amazing thing.
These are the hard truths that need to get exposed, and there's really not that many people doing it out there. We're going to wrap it up for tonight. I want to thank everybody, the listeners in the chat room, those of you who hear this later in archive, and my guests, Chris Hawley and Mac Maloney, who have spent 2 hours dissecting what I think is the UFO realm as it is today. Guys, thanks a lot for coming on tonight, and we'll be talking to you both very soon.
Thanks very much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Randy.
And for you, the listeners out there, we're going to go out after the bumper music. I'm going to play Mac Maloney, Flight. And you should know that Mac, if you go to MacMaloney.com, does have some music there that you can purchase. And so that's going to close it out for this week. Next week, Micah Hanks will be here, the UFO Singularity. We'll talk about transhumanism and the future of humanity through contact with extraterrestrials. That should be a pretty raucous show as well. We'll see you next week. This is Off Planet Radio. I'm Randy Moggins. The truth is out there. It's inside you.
This is Off Planet Radio.